This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Raise your hand if you've been in more than one morning meeting that didn't quite inspire you for the rest of the day. Okay, put your hands down. But teachers across the country are using morning meetings with students to get the day off to a fast, productive start. And it appears to be even more important for students with special needs.
It's just a really nice way to meet kids with all type of different ability levels.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk about over 100 morning meeting ideas for special ed students. Then we'll hear from someone who took bedtime stories for his kids and turned them into a book to inspire young students. And we'll spend an academic minute with race, religion, and politics, and what could possibly go wrong there. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Getting the school day off to a fast, productive start can be a challenge, but many teachers are doing just that by having a morning meeting with their class each day. This can be especially helpful for special ed students and children with special needs. Now there's a book filled with ideas for these special meetings called Morning Meetings for Special Education Classrooms, 101 Fun Ideas, Creative Activities, and Adaptable Techniques. Here to talk about these morning meetings is the book's author, Dr. Felicia Durden. Dr. Durden holds a PhD in educational leadership and is the principal of a large urban school in Phoenix, Arizona. I asked why she took on this project.
I wrote this book because I really have a heart and a passion for students with special needs and the gifted and talented population. A lot of times in education, research shows that we teach to the middle. It's just natural that we teach to the middle, and sometimes the kids who are a little below or the kids who are above aren't exactly getting what they need in differentiation. And the morning meeting is a great way to differentiate on the content and take it to different levels. And that was really the heart behind why I wrote this book, because I really want to give teachers practical strategies, something they can put into place right away and not have to do all the hard thinking, because I've done it for them and I've practiced and failed and know what really works. And so I just wanted to give a tool that teachers could immediately utilize.
The concept of the morning meeting, I remember homeroom. Is this a different thing?
Morning meeting is in your homeroom, but it's a different concept. It is actually the framework that you use when you bring kids together in the morning to set them up for success.
And your book is specifically for students with special needs. Do they have different morning meetings and different morning meeting needs?
Students with special needs do have specific morning meeting needs. A lot of times, morning meeting is a great time for them to work on social skills. They're able to work on how to accept yes or no, for example, how to get along with others. And it's just a really nice way to meet kids with all type of different ability levels to come together and learn things. Not only social skills, but also you can tie it into your content areas. It's written specifically for special education because I focus on how to differentiate and to make it work for a special education class which may have multiple grade levels in one room.
Do morning meetings in schools that do it, do they separate the special education kids from the regular kids during that meeting?
It depends. So the book is written for the self-contained model where all of the special needs students may be in one classroom. However, here in Arizona and in a lot of other states, we're having a mixed model where students are integrated with other grade level peers, not just their special education associates. And it can still work. However, the fact is that most teachers who don't have a special education classroom may not have the time for the morning meetings. It may be something really quick. I see it a lot more in my K-5 classrooms, but when you start to get into middle school, you don't see it as often.
And just going back, how widespread is the morning meeting concept in education around the country?
I think it's really a hot item that teachers really like as a way to start their day, especially when you have kids with autism and other areas on the spectrum, that you have to have a way to assimilate them to the day, and the morning meeting is a perfect way to allow them to assimilate to the class, know what's front-loaded for the day, so you can also use it to preview the schedule for the day. And what I also have found, the reason why it's so popular, is that we have a lot of kids with social and emotional, not only in special ed, but in the regular ed classroom. And we're trying to find ways to teach kids to cope. Yoga is also a really hot topic in elementary education these days, is that we're finding kids need a way to just refocus and come into grips. I mean, they're on the internet and there is so much stimulation around, and we often find that when they come in the classroom, we need to find ways to bring them in, draw them in, and calm them down. And I think that's why those fidget spinners, which drive teachers crazy, are so popular, because they do help with tactile for kids to help them focus.
Okay, so the bell is rung. Everybody's in the classroom for the start of the day. Take us through just a typical morning meeting.
Typical morning meeting starts with the teacher calling all of the children to a specific area. It can be on the carpet, which is where I often see it. And when I was a teacher, I always had the kids come and sit on the floor, but they can also sit in chairs. So she comes, she brings the class together, and they usually greet each other with a good morning, you know, greet a neighbor, how is it going, how are you feeling today? Then you often see that the teacher may move into some type of a song or a story to tie them into the day and bring them all together. Then you would see the teacher possibly reviewing the schedule for the day. This is where we're going to be taking our day. We're going to start here and go through this. Then you might see a social skill being taught. The teacher may want to talk to the kids. Today we're going to talk about how to be friends and what does that look like and what does that sound like. The beauty of the book is that I give over 101 ideas of different things to do during morning meeting, so you can have a different focus for that curriculum time. You end the morning meeting again by bringing the kids together with a final goodbye and start for the day, and that can look different ways as well. It could be a goodbye song that a lot of teachers like to use, or it could just be a review of what we just went over in morning meeting, and then setting them off for success for the day. There's really no right or wrong way to do it, but the thing is you want to have consistency, because that's another reason why we do the morning meeting, is that it begins the day with structure. And a lot of kids with special needs need that structure. They are often set off if they have any type of a change in their day, in their schedule. You may see that they begin to get anxious. And so the teacher needs to, when they develop this morning meeting, figure out a way that works best for her class or his class, and then follow that each day.
And is this primarily K through 5?
No, this is all grade levels, K through 12. I've seen some wonderful morning meetings take place in high school classrooms where teachers do the same thing, just with different curriculum that matches the age level or ability of their kids.
In your book, you talk about you kind of group the morning meetings by different strategies for skill building, community, social development, different subject skills. How did you group that together and why?
I grouped it that way because as a teacher, you're very busy and you're trying to plan for different curriculum that you are required to go through. So I grouped it like, okay, I'm seeing that the kids are having a problem with socializing. Let me pull something from the morning meeting book that I can incorporate into a quick 5-minute morning meeting activity. I grouped them also by reading and math, because morning meeting is a great way to front load information that you might be introducing later in the day. All of the Common Core standards are aligned to those activities, as well as the science standards, so that you can find that information there to help make it easier. The groupings make sense because, as I said, you're going to be pulling for different needs. Hey, I'm teaching a math lesson on time. Let me try to fit something in really quick in my morning meeting to front load it, because research has shown that when we provide that pre-teaching, kids are more successful.
And some of those social skills that you talk about in the book, just complimenting each other is something that it's kind of, I guess you do kind of need to work on that when you're young, don't you?
You do. We need curriculum for that. And I think that's the thing that I find most interesting as a principal, is that we expect kids to behave, but we don't teach them that. And they don't necessarily come to us with those skills. We have to teach it. It's a curriculum that we have to think about, just as we teach kids to read, to do long division. We also need to teach them how to compliment one another, how to take a compliment, how to work together, how to share. Those are really important skills, not just for special education children, but for all kids.
And you mentioned Common Core, and at the end of each of these activities you give, you also show which of the Common Core and Next Gen standards that these can relate to.
Yes, I do. I did that because I think it's really important. Teachers need to be able to justify what they're doing. We know that we have a lot of accountability. And so just knowing that what you're doing is not a waste of time, that it actually is aligning to a standard that you're going to have to teach, what a phenomenal way to do it than during the morning meeting.
And where did you go to get all these, 101 different ideas? Where did you go to get the ideas?
Over 20 years of experience in education, I've done the gamut. I've actually taught every grade level from K through college. I was a reading Title I teacher, so I had a lot of work with special needs students in that capacity. I also had an English degree, so I taught at the high school level, juniors and seniors in English, and at the college level. So it's just a, years of experience teaching and always being a proponent of having a morning meeting. I love to sing. I love to bring kids together. I had the opportunity, actually, which I have to share, last week where one of our kindergarten teachers had to leave early due to not feeling well, and I was right in my element. I pulled the kids to the carpet and started singing and teaching them just right away. It's just something naturally inside of me, and so it was fun, and it was like one of the best days I've had in a very long time, and another teacher was in there and like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how quickly you were able to draw them in. She had been struggling. It's just something that I innately think about a lot is how can we bring community together? Building community is really important in the classroom as well as in society, and the morning meeting is a phenomenal way to do that.
Yeah, you just go to them, hey, this is not my first rodeo. I got this.
Exactly. Oh, many, many.
Talk about how you integrate your gifted and talented students into this.
I talk about SIM because we have to remember that it's not just kids that have deficits, but we also need to challenge those kids who are gifted and talented. And so we talk about in the book how to relate it to them. How do we expand? They are the perfect examples of students who can be your co-teachers, who can lead groups, who can start to help lead morning meeting. So I did include that population in the book because they're sometimes forgotten. That the gifted and talented, they sometimes also have issues with how to relate to others because they're so bright. I'm thinking about a student in mine right now that we're working with him on how to get along with others, how to talk with other students. He's in fifth grade, but his mathematical ability is of a junior or senior in high school. And so he's so bright and has such a large vocabulary, and teaching them those skills as well, so that they can develop that social ability to interact with their peers.
One thing you do talk about towards the end is afternoon meetings, maybe Friday afternoon week reviews. Is that something that's done widespread?
Definitely. That's a great way, especially in the upper grades. I found that my teachers really like to do that afternoon meeting because they're teaching so much content throughout the day, and you might have to just sort of stop because it's time to go to lunch or time to go to a special. Bringing the kids all together as a community and having that review time really helps kids solidify that understanding before going on to something new the next day. And it's a great way to review and assess.
So what's next? Morning meeting ideas 102 to 202?
You know, I was just thinking about that. I think so. I think that I would love to continue on the subject because there are so many other strands to put in there. And also make me putting a spin in there for more for the gifted and talented population because there's not a lot out there on how to help those children. And also tips for parents on how to incorporate this into their home at the dinner table and how to start building that community and understanding at home.
Again, the name of Dr. Felicia Durden's book is Morning Meetings for Special Education Classrooms, 101 Fun Ideas, Creative Activities, and Adaptable Techniques. Still to come, a dad took his love for telling bedtime stories and created a book to inspire students. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. got any questions or comments about the best of our knowledge, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to the Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Brian Johnson has a pretty interesting life story. As an entrepreneur and innovator, he founded Kernel, OS Fund, and Braintree. But he saves a lot of his creativity for bedtime stories. Now he's taken a series of those stories to inspire young people in the new middle grade book, Code 7, Cracking the Code for an Epic Life. I asked Johnson where the idea for this book came from.
I love telling my children stories when they would go to bed. And we would go every night. We had this ritual. We'd lay down and they'd say, Dad, tell us a story. And so I'd make up these stories and I'd always make them the protagonists. And as I watched their body language, as I told them the stories, I could tell that they actually lived in these worlds I created for them. And I would oftentimes tease them and stop in the middle of the story and say, all right, guys, time to go to bed. I'll finish tomorrow. And they would just be an uproar about them not having closure on the story at some climactic moment. And so it was so much fun to do this with them. I decided that I'd write them down and put them in a book.
They didn't know you were in teasing. You were just, you know, trying to figure out the end.
Exactly. I just needed to stall a little bit.
Right. Well, tell us about, I assume it's the fictional Flint Hill Elementary School and their kids and their stories.
So it's actually Flint Hill Elementary is an actual school. It's the school they go to. And many of the characters in that book are their actual teachers and friends in the book.
I'm assuming the names were changed to protect the innocent?
Some of them actually are real names, and they're people who wanted to be involved in this book. So they're happily named appropriately.
So were these stories part of these people, these children and teachers' personalities, or did you just create new personalities for them?
Yeah, I created new personalities. I just took the experiences they were having in life, and then I architected a fictional story around something that they were doing or working on to make it tangible. And so I wanted the book to be as relatable as possible to their everyday lives.
And the stories involve code words. What's that all about?
Oftentimes, I guess as each of us lives by certain ethics and morals, and we have identity and we have aspirations, and a lot of these things that we have, we inherit from our parents and our teachers and our friends and society generally. And the purpose of this exercise is to invite children to explore that if they didn't actually inherit anything, what would they choose to do themselves? What would they choose to aspire towards? What would they try to become? And so this is an encouragement for children to think about these things on their own and not solely accept what is given to them by default.
And what are the code words?
So I think of them in terms of story. There's authenticity and courage, honesty, perseverance, responsibility. The last one being become. And so the idea is that these words all contribute to a continued process of the kind of person that one wants to become.
What are you hoping? Well, it's a two-part question. What are you hoping students get out of this? And what are you hoping parents and teachers get out of it?
I hope it's relatable. I hope it's fun. And if possible, I'd like it to invite someone to contemplate maybe something they took for granted before, of their ability to think independently and decide what kinds of things they'd like to become in life.
And this is more than just the book. You have an online component to this, too, where people can choose their own code word, right?
That's right. So this is an exercise we've done at a few schools where they've read the book and then they've done an exercise where they identify a word and they articulate what that word means to them. Then they articulate how that translates into the world of action. And so in the book, each character in their particular story learns a particular lesson about life. And at the end, they all apply the particular skill set they acquired to do something impactful in the community together. And so for these students who go through this exercise, it's to encourage them to be thoughtful about what they do in life and do, then combine their abilities and talents with other, their peers to do things that could have an impact in the world. Oftentimes, children don't realize that they have the ability to do impactful things in the world. They think of themselves as children and subject to these authority structures we have in place where they're told what to think and what to do and what to learn. And we don't invite them to reverse that and tell us what we might think and learn and do. So I'd like to flip that on its head and put the children in the driver's seat and see what they come up with. I personally find a child's mind to be one of the most interesting and entertaining, exciting and thoughtful forms of intelligence. I love what my children come up with. I love the frames they offer. I find it to be a breath of fresh air. So I think just engaging with them on these things is always such an enjoyable endeavor.
Again, the name of Brian Johnson's new book is Code 7, Cracking the Code for an Epic Life. Can the intersection of race, religion, and politics create anything more than conflict? That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Politically charged sermons can have varying effects on congregations. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, R. Kari Brown, associate professor in the Department of Sociology at Wayne State University, examines the pulpit.
July 2005, downtown Detroit. On the steps of Central United Methodist Church was Reverend Ed Rowe, delivering a sermon about the Iraq War. He persuasively connected Jesus' Sermon on the Mount to the Iraq War. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called the children of God. But are we bringing peace to Iraq, he argued. This made me wonder whether Reverend Rowe's sermon could convince listeners to see the world as he saw it. Or did his sermon simply go in one ear and out the other? It turns out, sermons like this, charged with political statements, matter to public opinion, especially when considering the race of the audience. Our study indicates that when accounting for religious faith, partisanship, and social demographic characteristics, white attendees of political congregations are more likely to adopt policy positions that promote poverty reduction, racial equality, peace, immigrant rights, and the like. However, this relationship does not hold up as well for blacks and Hispanics. It's not that blacks and Hispanics are less motivated by clergy pronouncements about social justice. It's just that white attendees of worship settings that discuss political issues are likely to hear sermons that challenge their assumptions about how their theological beliefs square with their ideas about fairness and privilege. It's possible that these congregations attract progressive-minded whites and reinforce their commitment to policies aimed at promoting greater equality for citizens. Conversely, for blacks and Hispanics, these sermons may not associate with their attitudes because they don't challenge what they already believe about the government's obligations to its citizens. And so, it's possible that political clergy, like the Reverend Rowe's of the world, can move white Americans to think more critically about social justice.
That was R. Kari Brown of Wayne State University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.